Hello, this is Matt, host of the SequelCast. What you're listening to is the first episode of a spin-off series of the SequelCast called Sequel Commentary. In it, each episode, and it should be about one every month or so, Thrasher and myself and whatever guest we might have on will produce a full-length audio commentary for a sequel. It might be a sequel we've talked about on the SequelCast before. It might be a sequel we haven't talked about on the show before, and you can listen to it by itself as an audio file, but ideally you should listen to it at the same time as you watch the movie, and in the show we do a countdown as to when you should pause the show and then start it back up again when the movie starts. In this episode, there's going to be mentions of a SequelCast Bandcamp page, and please disregard those. We initially were trying some sequel commentary episodes on Bandcamp as a way to raise money for the SequelCast to pay for production cost, hosting fees, that sort of thing, and that didn't pan out. So ignore any mention of the SequelCast Bandcamp site because it doesn't exist anymore. And anyway, I hope you enjoy this first episode of the SequelCast commentary on Smokey and the Bandit 3. And let's start the show. Thanks. After the credits roll, there's always more to tell. Doing really well. From shock treatment to Jason X to Police Academy 6. This is SequelCast, and they are unsurpassed at following a franchise until the bitter end. This is SequelCast, and your hosts have asked that I inform you that the show will now begin.
The theme song to the SequelCast is performed and written by Mark with a C. Check out his latest album, Motherfuckers Be Bullshitting, at markwithac.bandcamp.com. Now we return you to the SequelCast. And your hosts have asked that I inform you that the show will
now begin. Hello and welcome to the SequelCast. The SequelCast is a show that talks about movies in a franchise, one movie at a time. This is a very special episode that you have to, you know, that you very graciously, the listener, paid to get. And it's a commentary for Smokey and the Bandit Part 3. You can listen to it on your own, I suppose, but it's meant to be watched in conjunction with watching the movie. And Smokey and the Bandit Part 3, at least in the U.S., as of this recording, March 2012, you can watch on Netflix Watch instantly. Or, you know, you can buy a copy or even rent a copy. It shouldn't be hard to find. I know there's a DVD pack of Smokey and the Bandit 2 and 3 on the same disc. And there is also a massive set of the Smokey and the Bandit trilogy plus a bunch of the TV movies. With me is Thrasher.
Hello, everybody.
And listeners might recall Smokey and the Bandit 3 was one of the very first episodes of SequelCast, and this is a live commentary with the movie. So what we do is we have this movie paused right now at the one-second mark, and at the count of three, we're all going to press play.
Count of three? Or are we going to do 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, 3, play?
1, 2, 3, play, and when I say play, then you're going to click on the play button or push the play button on your remote. And right now, we just have it paused at the 1 second mark. So, 1, 2, 3, play. So we're seeing the Universal logo up here.
Have we already degenerated into describing exactly what's on screen?
Well, that's what bad commentaries do. I figure we should do that a little bit, but just sort of, it's a note for the listener.
For younger viewers, this little intro here, this is before every Star Wars joke that could possibly be made had been made. That was fresh and satirical at the time.
So recall in Smokey and the Bandit 1 and 2, Smokey, you know, referred to the police. And what was Jackie Gleason's character's name? Was it Buford T. Justice?
Buford T. Justice.
Right? And
yep.
He's the bad guy. But in this one, he's sort of like the, I don't know about the hero, as it were.
But okay, now folks, remember Burt Reynolds' face. You're not going to be seeing it again for a long time.
Not till the end of the show. So even though this movie has a weird intro, as you're seeing, in sepia tone, retelling what happened in the first two movies, not that it matters.
As if it was a classic film they had dug up from the archives.
Well, the first, Smokey and the Bandit, was a tremendous hit, and I think the second one was too. And you can certainly see influences of the wild, you know, hicks and cops chasing a dude through the woods.
I think, kind of inspired some of the sequences in the first Rambo movie, First Blood. It has a bit of that slapstick quality to it, I feel. And Jackie Gleason was really well known for The Honeymooners, but lots of other things. He was a comedy legend and apparently was a huge alcoholic. I'm reading a book about Richard Donner, who directed a movie called The Toy with Jackie Gleason and Richard Pryor. And between the two of them, they were pretty strong, drug-fueled personalities on that set.
Well, just about, you know, so many people in comedy were. I mean, that was, if you wanted to be a functioning alcoholic, you were a comic.
And that's still the case today, whether, you know, it's alcohol or cocaine or ecstasy or whatever is in fashion. Problems with comedians are, and maybe it's, I'm sure it's less than it used to be in the 80s. Again, cut back to Burt Reynolds because you got the rights to the footage. And I mean, but if you haven't seen the first two movies, you have no idea what's happening except for the basic cartoon premise of the bandit always outwits Smokey. And supposedly, this film was supposed to be with Jackie Gleason playing the parts of Smokey and the bandit, but that's not what happened.
So the original tagline was Smokey the Bandit 3, Smokey is the Bandit. Supposedly, a lot of that footage was shot, but test audiences didn't respond well to it. So they went back in and shot new scenes with Snowman as the bandit.
So the beginning parody of the Star Wars crawl, this is a parody of Patton, a movie written by Francis Ford Coppola, starring George C. Scott.
Which was also brilliantly parodied in the intro to the Sesame Street movies.
Which one?
The first Sesame Street movies, where Oscar the Grouch comes up in front of the American flag and does this Patton speech and then sings the Grouch national anthem.
Is that the Let's Follow Big Bird, or Let's...
Follow That Bird, yes.
Follow That Bird, okay.
No, I like the one nun in the audience who has glasses hanging around her neck. So clearly she needs them to read because she's not wearing them while watching this guy poncing it up on stage.
Right.
I do. Now, of course, why would you be wearing a golden helmet? Was that a gift he was given on his retirement?
You know, I don't know. I think he's sort of the thing, he's getting too old for the shit. Like, who cares? He's kind of crazy. I mean, after failing so much trying to catch the bandit and causing so much property to police cars and public property damage, you know, who knows?
Little Enos looks like a child in a mustache.
Oh, yeah. So this is Big Enos and Little Enos. And that joke can be either a penis joke or an anus joke, depending on how you pronounce their name. And Little Enos is better known as Paul Williams, is that right?
Yep.
Who wrote such songs as Rainbow Connection and did all the music for Phantom of Paradise and a lot of different stuff. And there's a documentary about him that's on the festival circuit right now that's supposed to be pretty cool. I don't recognize the actor that's Big Enos, though, from anything, do you?
No, but it also looks like they stepped off of a 4th of July play from a county fair.
Yeah, I mean, this one had a much lesser budget, and you can tell. I mean, look, there's not a big crowd there, although I guess that's part of the joke.
No, that's the joke.
Yeah. But still, I mean, it's Jackie Gleason. You think it could get a few more people to show up? I don't think...
You know what this means, though? Because everyone in the crowd is spaced out. That means everyone in this community hates each other and doesn't want to sit next to the people that they know.
I think you're right. So this is his son, who's also a hillbilly, who had a pretty small part, and wasn't he trying to marry Sally Field in the first one?
Yeah, the original film, he was going to marry Sally Field, although why either one of them wants to marry each other, I have no idea.
Well, you know, maybe he was due for a big inheritance when his father died.
he was gonna collect... Yeah, I can see now. The county took out a huge insurance policy on Buford C. Justice, and his son was just waiting to collect. That's why he kept pushing him into these reckless races. That woman in the background is so intensely focused on the two Enises. Also, they probably should have given Buford some mirrored glasses. I think he looked pretty good with the sheriff mirrored glasses.
It fills out his face a bit. I mean, he already has a impressive, you know, like Orson Welles style chubbiness body to his face. Body, too, yes.
Yeah. All he needs is the wine.
listeners might recall in the sequel cast, we did a bunch of episodes in Planet of the Apes. And in fact, in Battle of the Planet of the Apes, the last of the classic ones, Paul Williams played Virgil, kind of the nerd ape that's also in charge of the weapons, I believe.
Oh, hey, you know what? I'm going to have to recommend this. If you're watching Smokey the Bandit 3, snack on shortbread cookies that you're dipping in a big jar of peanut butter. That's what I am doing right now. It is enhancing this experience.
Is it
Jackie Gleason's in this.
Chunky peanut butter or smooth?
Smooth.
So what we just talked about...
It's always smooth with me.
And yeah, you get this military thing that doesn't work at all. They're trying to... Yeah, so this song, Buford T. Justice, it's no Eastbound and Down, the theme song to the original Smokey and the Bandit. And it's not done by Jerry Reed, either.
They're going to lose their deposit on that U-Haul.
Yeah. So what, Big Enos and Little Enos made an offer of $250,000 to Smokey. And what was the reason for that?
Oh, this is all part of a bit, you know, about how he could never catch the bandit.
So he's just trying to catch the bandit. He's not trying to reach a destination.
Well, I'll admit, I was paying so much attention to the movie that I wasn't paying attention to what anyone was saying.
So you're seeing
some ladies.
Some chicks in bikinis on the beach, and even though this movie is rated PG, at the time there wasn't a PG-13, so you could get away with nudity, and there's a lot of weird adult material that suggests maybe they were trying to go for an R like the first movie at some point, and it got heavily cut. But again, you know, there's not an alternate cut of this. There's not much proof of it, of the whole thing of...
And now, this is not the kind of physical comedy that Jackie Gleason's really known for.
Playing shuffleboard?
Yeah, I mean, well, like, go back. I really wish it was easy to get access to classic television, but if you look back at the old Jackie Gleason show from the 60s, it is amazing the depth of his physical comedy. So much of that show was pantomime, and Jackie Gleason at his peak, as rotund as he was, could do this amazing stuff with his body to convey character, action, and to communicate humor.
Yeah, but as we mentioned, this is far past his peak. I mean,
but he still does it. He still has his classic sense of timing.
I mean, this movie is a pretty short movie at about 84, 85 minutes, but all this stuff must be like deleted scenes or something, because you can't imagine they would have filmed all these scenes just for an opening montage.
Committing an act of assault.
On a civilian, yeah.
Oh, God, his nose is bleeding. He really tuned that guy up.
So I'm guessing he's in Florida because of SeaWorld?
Oh, yeah, well, we saw him entering Florida. There was a sign.
Okay, I missed that part. Shamu, or maybe it wasn't called Shamu back then. And wet. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to stop describing what's happening. That's a terrible way to do a commentary.
Absolutely.
Just amateur. But why do so many DVD commentaries do that, where they just describe what's happening? Is it because, like, the director or the producer or whomever's giving the commentary hasn't seen the film in a while?
Sometimes it's, you know, they people sort of will say what they have to say. Like in the case of the Simpsons commentaries, often the newer the episode, the less there is to say, but that's mainly just, I think that's mainly just because of the time gives your thoughts a chance to ferment. And so you've had a lot more to ferment on with something that's like 20 years old than with something that's like 10 years old. See, now I'm getting flashes of Death Race. I'm imagining they're going to start running down the marching band.
We just saw flashes of panties earlier, but yeah.
I mean, monkey business! So is that their Amazonian bodyguards?
I think so. I mean, I don't know. It's also kind of funny that a big guy and a little fellow would have all these ladies. It's kind of an okay visual gag.
Well, I'm not really sure it's a gag. I mean, they're just rich guys who can hire a staff of floozies. A distaff, if you will.
Now, in the other Smokey and the Bandit movies, you had Jackie Gleason playing, like, relatives of Buford T. Justice, but I don't think you have that in this film.
We'll see.
We'll have to see.
Don't count them out. I mean,
one of them, he has like gay Canadian relatives.
And there is Jaws.
Yeah, part of the bet is they have to keep the shark on the car the whole time, I think, to promote the Enos's fish and chips.
good old-fashioned Texas fish and chips.
But that dish is pretty popular in England, but you still see it in any American bar or any good one. You can get fish and chips, and I've never had a bad fish and chips. I've had a bad cheeseburger in my time, but I've never had a bad fish and chips.
I have had bad fish and chips, but never in Britain. I went to Britain and Scotland once. Oh man, you have not had fish and chips until you've had it straight from the source.
I had it from a British person living in Sarasota, Florida before, where each fish and chip, each like fried fish, is like a foot long.
That's how you do it. I don't like the way they do fish and chips in America, because so often you don't get the whole batter-dipped fried fish fillet. You get these like mini cutlets. It's almost like they're giving you a basket of fish sticks, and that is an insult.
Which is probably what it is. So here goes old Smokey on his quest. I wish the greatest adventurer is playing right now.
It would have to be like an Old West thing. The greatest adventure, it's what lies ahead. He's gonna take that fishy coast to coast. Frodo of the Nine Fingers through the ring in Mordor. Where are you, Gandalf, when we need you the most?
I think Jackie Gleason would have made a fine Gollum, but it's past his time, I suppose.
Where is my precious?
One of these days... Yeah, I know very little of Jackie Gleason apart from the Smokey and the Bandit trilogy, sad to say, but I understand he's well regarded.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a reason why he's called the Great One.
Yeah.
And you don't exactly see why in this film, but it's, you know, definitely, it is well worth your time to go back and find the old Smokey and the Bandit. That is our second flip-off.
Again, another example of how PG movies could get away with more because there was not a PG-13 rating. I mean, I recall in Airplane, which is rated PG, you get to see a pair of tits when the plane is shaking.
That's a good gag. Now, K&C, why is that old man wearing a shirt that says K&C Daycare? I feel like there's a whole story behind that.
These are just a bunch of extras, I think.
But one of the extras just happens to be an old man wearing a K&C Daycare shirt.
Yeah.
He's got some fine teeth there.
You think they're false?
They might be at his age, but I don't know.
They got those classy Hollywood implant teeth like Denzel Washington has. And there's nothing against it. If I could afford it, the Enises, they're trying to throw him off.
Now, how did they beat him there? Did they run?
They're the law. No, part of the bet has to do with the time. Because they just said you caught him 2.5 minutes, so there's some time limit. And, it's just so...
throwing money around isn't the best way to promote your business. Oh, and here they are, ahead of him again.
I mean, because this movie really doesn't have Burt Reynolds in it proper until the end. So why even bother making a third one? Is it just they thought, we'll get people to see it just on the strength of Jackie Gleason alone?
Well... it's just that whole, if they liked it once, they'll love it twice, and we own them if it's three times. You know, it's like fighting against the law of diminishing returns. Now, it just occurred to me, his son is still an officer of the law.
Yep.
Is he on sabbatical, or has he forgotten that he has to show up to work?
I think he's using all his saved up vacation time to go with his pappy on a drive cross country. I mean, part of the look to Buford T. Justice is brilliant. I think the mustache is what makes it. That tiny little Vincent Price-style mustache. And the big glasses. It's just so distinctive. And that the character is a big kind of racist asshole. Adds to it as well.
Well, he's sort of a slapstick version of the good old boy South, so that's kind of inescapable.
Yep.
They may be in bad taste, but it's still inescapable.
Now, there's a lot of parts in Florida that really look like that, so I've been on this.
We actually, Jason and I drove through a lot of that when we went down to MegaCon a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
We passed by Pat Robertson's Bible theme park.
Oh. You should have tried to go to that. I don't know.
Well, it was the one day we had free was the day we left, and it was closed. Although we did get some good pictures hanging around the entrance. I was very tempted to jump the fence, but I could see one security guard in there.
Oh, sure, I bet.
You know, you want at least three people so one person can run interference and the other person can be your backup. Oh, it's Marcel Marceau!
Because mimes like gay bars? That was a funny joke.
I like the term County Mountie. That sounds like the title of an old Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoon. Tune in next week for County Mounties or the Puck Stops Here.
Now, the way Paul William acts as Little Ian is he does a lot of eye-bugging and does a lot of movement, and he seems to be more into it than the actor that's playing Big Enos. But maybe that's just the nature of the character. The little one's more physical and stuff, but he seems to still be giving it his all, even though this is a sequel that clearly no one really cares about.
Well, whenever you have a comedic dyad, typically the little one is the one who's much more impish, much more out of control. Yeah. It's the whole dichotomy that Eric Idle talks about in The Road to Mars, that there, whenever you have two clowns, you always have the white-faced clown and the red-nosed clown. And Little Enos is the red-nosed clown. He is all about the body and the anima, while the white-faced clown is always about rigidity and death and calcification. Speaking of calcium, there's a lot.
Now that looks more like
they could get some money off of that.
That looks more like soap than milk, but if it was really milk, I just can't imagine what that would smell like. But it looks like they're in a bubble bath.
It's probably just water with chalk dust in it.
Yeah. I never noticed that before, but you think Little Enos having the mustache is supposed to have him look a bit like Buford T. Justice?
I don't think so. I think it's just, again, it's like just a good old boy South kind of thing.
And that mustache would have been in style at the time.
Now, you know what they need in this scene? Like, Little Enos should have, like, a box of cookies and be dipping it into the milk in the car. That'd be a nice gag.
That would be. Right, so, I mean, because they can't get Burt Reynolds, instead you get Snowman to pretend like he's the bandit. Which, it just reminds you how much, and, you know, Jerry Reed is an okay actor, but he's no Burt Reynolds. And it just makes you wish Burt Reynolds was doing it. Even if it would have been the same shitty dialogue and same stupid scenarios, it would have been more enjoyable with Burt Reynolds.
That dog is sick.
That dog, yeah, is old. Has those red eyes.
Well, you know, I kind of wonder, it's almost like, I like how he doesn't use a CB, he uses an old-timey radio phone. But I like that they never even consider calling the actual bandit, they just go straight to Snowman.
Yeah, I don't know, and I mean, it is, on the one hand, it's sort of interesting Snowman gets to step out and do more of the action, but you get these characters that even to the point in Buford T. Justice, they're meant to be supporting characters, and you shine the light on them. You know, it's like that Friends spinoff sitcom, Joey. Right. Or, Frasier's not a great example, but you know
what
I'm
saying. Well, Frasier was good.
Yeah, Frasier was actually good. But you try to take a supporting character and blow it out to a whole movie, like Nutty Professor 2, The Clumps, which focuses more on the family, and they just can't take the weight of, because they're just not well-developed enough.
Oh, fun fact, that's the same Faye Fat Man from Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Oh, okay.
That was a joke.
Crash through ice. So again, these are pretty low-key stunts compared to what was in the first two films, where they'd go over pits and crash through a bunch of cars, all these other things. And the stunts get a bit better later on, but they clearly aren't working as much.
And old lady swearing. The only thing more hackneyed than that is old lady rapping.
And you can see both in Happy Gilmore, I think.
And The Wedding Singer.
Yes.
So did Snowman just drop whatever load he was hauling?
I think so. He was excited, you know, to get to drive by himself. He says, all I got to hold is my ass. You know, meaning that he doesn't have to worry about carrying transport. He can drive a lot faster, be a lot more reckless, especially if he's not driving a truck and he's driving the bandit's car.
I'm going to say, I do like Snowman as a character. Oh, here we go.
If you want to see another comedy that's a sequel that has KKK jokes, might I recommend
Fletch Lives, yeah.
The second Fletch film.
It's weird. Like, I never... Even when I was like, because as I mentioned on the Smoking the Bandit 3 episode, Smoking the Bandit 3 is my guilty pleasure movie. For some reason I can never fully understand, I have this compulsion to just stop whatever I'm doing and watch it if it's on TV. And this is like a scene that even when I was a kid, I really don't know how to react to. Because on the one hand, you got some Klansmen just harassing two black truck drivers. But, like, I don't know, like, I don't feel like the Klansmen are really being made fools of. This is just being treated so matter-of-factly with no comment that, like, I don't feel that there's really a joke going on.
You know, it's just more of taking a stereotype to the extreme, and there would have been stuff in the news at this time about the KKK trying to rise up and stay current and protest against all these civil right marches and so forth. So, it's just an easy Southern stereotype, because you already got the bumpkin sort of thing going on with Buford and Justice, and more specifically,
I just feel something should be happening there. Like, it's just, I'm just seeing two guys get harassed. There's no comedy going on.
No, and at least these sequences with Buford T. Justice and his son, you get some back and forth, and the comedy, however mild, is still more comedy than just being like, oh, it's a bunch of rednecks dressed like the KKK messing with some black guys, and the black guys are going to knock the KKK guy off and say, like, damn honkies, or whatever the punchline is. You know? And you got the music trying to jazz things up, but...
The weird thing is, it's like, it's Mardi Gras music. It's not, like, chase music.
Right. Because I guess Buford T. Justice has handled the Klan so much in the past. Where's that movie?
He's a real Klan handler.
he likes to get Klan chowder.
Oh, okay, now this is good. Now we're getting kind of a comment. But at the same time, like, how often has he done this to Klansmen?
Look who's tarred and feathered now.
See, okay, yeah. I like them getting tarred and feathered. That's a nice climax to a very protracted segment. Although I do feel sorry for those chickens.
I mean, part of the nature of a road movie, which the Smokey and the Bandit trilogy as a whole is that it's forced to be very episodic. You can't really have a very strong overarching plot. Or if you can, that's not what they're doing.
So did he just break into the bandit's house and steal one of his outfits?
I don't know. I mean, it makes you think that...
Well, I guess it's his house. He has pictures of his dog everywhere.
Right, but maybe you think Snowman himself had a fantasy of always being the bandit, and now he actually gets to. I mean, that's the kind of thing I get. Look at that record player in the back. Remember that when everything had fake wood paneling and a lot of switches?
My mother used to have an old station wagon that had the fake wood paneling around the side. That was an amazing car.
The car I drive now still has fake wood paneling because it's an 89 Honda Acura Legend.
Oh, cool.
Which was a top-of-the-line car at the time, but when I got it, it had 215,000 miles. So, geez.
So he got him a dachshund to seduce.
Now, why didn't they do a fourth Smokey and the Bandit about the dogs?
That would have been Smokey the Bandit. That would have been Smokey the Bandit 4 on the floor, where it would have been all about the pets stealing a car. And the pets could talk, and one of them would be voiced by Jim Belushi.
Smokey and the Bondit. Yeah. There you go. Gonna go smoke some Smokies.
No, I like it that it jumps out of the garage. That it went from zero to airborne in a quarter of a second.
Now, doesn't the Bandit have a different car in each movie? It's not the same one.
I know it's a classic Trans Am, but I will freely admit I don't know if it's always specifically the same model. I feel like it should be. I get airborne once again. They are using their jumping ramp budget.
Yep. And of course, you know, these were shot with real cars. This is before they had computer graphics really or anything like that.
Yeah, there's a greater physicality to all this that I really appreciate.
This movie features a lot more varied country artists on the soundtrack all throughout the movie. It's not, you know, the first one had a few Jerry Reed songs, Eastbound and Down, and I think, like, they call him the Bandit.
Bandit, you're reckless.
Yeah, right. And
you pay much too fast. Yeah.
But this one, you get a lot of different country artists. I don't even think Jerry Reed is even featured on the soundtrack, as far as I can recall.
I'm going to have to look that up.
And, why don't you? And with all that, it's just so bizarre. Because when you have the same composer do the main songs in there, it really adds a flavor. They did that a lot with films in the 70s, where, you know, like Simon and Garfunkel. I can't believe I'm bringing this up in a commentary for Smoking the Bandit 3, where Simon and Garfunkel did the music for The Graduate and stuff. It lends a certain flavor to the film.
Hello, Bandit, my old friend.
Yep.
But
the Smokies chasing you again. Yeah.
we ought to do that parody. That can be we can do an album of musical song parodies. Oh, the sequel cast experience. Now, one thing I have noticed that one thing is because. You know, there's a great dynamic between Smokey and Snowman in the first two films. When you just have Snowman, I mean, you lose that dynamic right then and there. But you also lose like the two purposes where Smokey's job is to get something there in as little time as possible, and the Bandit's job is to take the heat, to draw the police officers by doing all this dangerous stuff. You know, being distraction, running interference.
You said so Smokey, you said Smokey, but you meant Snowman, but yeah.
Well, they're interchangeable in this film.
Right, and the other thing, too, is Snowman always had the dog in the car, so he had the dog to play off of when he had a lot of jokes like that. With the dogs at home watching TV, you just have like, oh, don't those dogs look cute? So believe it or not, this newscaster scene sets up a new character in the film, the newscaster.
No, apparently this commercial is going out live. Just even though their camera isn't hooked up to any kind of transmitter. And this was before wireless technology, folks.
That's not Robert England as the car salesman, is it?
It's not, but it really, really looks like him.
Doesn't it? Tall and gangly.
It really does.
And a big schnoz.
He looks kind of like Vincent Van Gogh, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
So it's so weird that she dresses up like this Southern thing, but then she talks with this, like, 1920s accent. I believe we talked about this in our episode on this. But it's such a weird choice, where a lot of it's hillbilly humor throughout the whole film. And then it's like, what are you doing, Snowman? We gotta catch the Bandit, see?
I'm a real tough cookie, and I don't take no guff.
He's jumping on the car, see? It's a special, and he jumps off. Not so special now, is he?
Now, see, I wouldn't buy a car that I saw the dealer jumping on.
I can't stand, despite the fact my teeth are kind of messed up because of genetics, even though I had braces and everything, I really can't stand gaps in teeth and bad teeth in people I'm dating. And so this actress has a big gap between her front teeth that's just driving me nuts. She's
Are you that serial killer that takes the teeth from people?
Yes, and I glue them together with super glue. And they wake up in a bathtub missing their kidney. So she apparently was trying to kill herself, but failed, walking out in the highway.
Apparently
so. She just jumps in a stranger's car because she's like, oh, this guy's being sexist. I don't like my job.
And the Snowman's a merciful soul. No, I like how that immediately they're out of the city.
Yeah. Again, this is, well, panty shot. This is also a callback to a scene in the first film where she dressed, Sally Field changes out of her bride's, her dress into something else in the backseat of the car as they're driving.
Yeah, the sequel has to give you the earlier movies, but faster and more of it.
What is it? George Lucas had the expression faster, more intense when he directed the old Star Wars movies. This is another thing from the earlier movies where everyone on the CB chimes in, like, oh, you're doing good, Bandit.
Well, like, I mean, the CB did really create a community on the road,
Right, I mean, when Jersey Jason was on one of our Smokey and the Bandit episodes way back, and you can listen to those at sequelcast.com, he said his parents got a CB for their car just because of Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, actually, one summer I stayed with Jersey Jason for a week. I visited. He showed me around Jersey. We went to a convention up there. And his parents also had a police scanner, which they left on all the damn time. That was many years ago. One beautiful summer.
Pretty crazy.
That is not tied down at all.
No, I mean, what the bed is has nothing to do with the bandit. They just use the bandit as something to slow him down, but he has to keep the shark on his car by the time he reached the finish line as a way to promote the restaurant as part of his contest to win $250,000.
So Snowman had a fine gentleman suit in the back of the Trans Am? No. Oh, also, you notice the bandit license plate has changed. The first time you saw the bandit's license plate, it was black letters. Second time you see it right there, it's red letters. So you can tell they were using different cars for different shots.
Well, that's not uncommon in movies, to be fair. But you think you'd have people to keep track of that and have like 10 identical license plates and the 10 stunt cars or however many they used. So they get their CB hooked up to the Buford T. Justice thing.
And they've already got it set to whatever the hell frequency he's on.
Yeah, how they knew that, I don't know. But they just do.
Well, I mean, Buford T. Justice always has his radio set to the one, set to one, because it's the only frequency he can remember.
I like the running gag how he treats his son like he's 10, even though he's a full-grown man.
Yeah, he really is like an overbearing patriarch of a man.
Shut your mouth, you little shit. Yeah.
Although I wonder what his son would have become if he had never had that horrible father.
Are the Enises naked in the car, or are they just topless? It's kind of disturbing either way.
I'm going to say naked because there was a pair of polka-dotted comedy boxer shorts hanging on their aerial. So at least one of them is completely naked.
Very perceptive. I think they're trying to distract Buford T. Justice with their wieners.
But of course, drying your clothes like that, sure they're going to be dry, but they're still going to smell like rancid milk.
Ugh. That's right. Oh, titties. A PG movie. See that in the magazine?
Yep. Now, it appears that there's, on that page we can see, on the left side of the page is titties, on the right side of the page appears to be Wensleydale cheese.
Or a skin infection, I don't know.
Oh, I hope it's cheese. I like a little cheese in my sex. A little bit of funk on the southern guitar riff here.
A little bit. That's kind of fun. I mean, you know, with the score for this movie, not the soundtrack, but just the instrumental stuff, they try to have fun with it, and that seems to work okay.
I like the perpetually bewildered look on Buford's son's face.
His head must have hurt after filming days and days of him doing, huh? These weird expressions on his face.
No, I like that little bit of legalese about the jurisdiction.
I mean, is there a reason why he has to stay in the highway? Can he just drive through the grass, or... I guess the police car isn't that great of a car.
You don't want to fuck up the car, I suppose.
Oh no, the police car spun out on the grass. That's pretty daring. So now, at least with them taking the shark, you have a little bit more of a plot going on. You have a clear goal.
Now we have the police just spinning pointlessly for no reason.
Popping, doing donuts. at least this part of the film, they're chasing after a shark. They have a clear goal. And it gives it a little bit, the plot, a little bit more momentum.
Yeah.
But it's hard to believe a third of the film is already over, and not a lot's really happened. I mean, you have sort of these car chases, which were a staple of the series, but however, it's just so limited. The stunts are nowhere near what they should be compared to the legacy of the other films, the first one in particular. So,
you know, looking at this, I haven't seen any of the cars involved in this particular chase sequence do a jump. So I'm guessing we are going to see a jump, because that's another staple of this series. If cars get in a chase, something's got to jump.
Well, there's also a lot of shots where both cars are not in the same shot, too. So that's another thing that portrays its budget. And although this is something that could have been filmed against blue screen, it appears that it wasn't. Or if it was, it was pulled off pretty well. So, I mean, you do get a real lot of authentic southern landscape in this film, like the other ones. And you get a sense of the time it was made with the costumes. And so that's sort of fun.
Hey, is that guy with the fro, is that the workout instructor that Buford punched?
I think so. Well, the car flipped. That's always an okay stunt. You know, if you want to see, like, Smokey and the Bandit-style stunts dialed up to 11, I recommend you watch the original Blues Brothers.
Oh, actually, what I love about this car roll, though, you can see the stuntman. I love that you can see, in that moment, you can see how absolutely real and physical that stunt is. So, sure, it's not over the top like you've probably seen a lot of films today, but it's that much more real, and that does convey an actual sense of danger.
It does, and it's like if you're watching the Fast and the Furious where there's cars driving through a tunnel being chased by a helicopter, or Mission Impossible, or whatever it is. It just makes it real tougher to swallow and buy into the danger. Here they're doing some off-road stuff in a construction site, but again, it's all pebbles and hills. It looks like a Doctor Who set from the 70s.
They're also back to the red license plate. I'm just going to do that. I'm going to keep track of which license plate we're seeing.
There's 40 red license plate sightings in Smokey and the Bandit 3 and 42 black ones.
When you find the red... Oh, yeah, so... Yeah, when you see the black license plate, you drink a black Russian. When you see the red license plate, you have a red-headed slut.
That's
the drinking game for this movie.
Is the red-headed slut a drink?
Yes, it is a drink. It's kind of, it tastes very, very much like fruit punch, and of course loaded with alcohol.
So it tastes like a redheaded slut. Ba-doom boom.
Ba-doom boom.
There you go.
So I was about to make a joke about ginger beer, but I'm going to spare the audience.
He kind of takes this girl hostage, really, or she kind of gives up herself to him, and, God, the sun's stupid.
Well, it's almost like, I don't, like, the thing about the sun is, does he act this way because his father's been belittling him his whole life and he's just given up? Or does the sun have some sort of mental disorder?
I'd like to think it's more like the Who's Tommy, where he's secretly really good at pinball, but no one knows it. Because he's trapped in a verbally and potentially physically abusive relationship with his father.
So he's a savant, but he just has not been exposed to the thing that he's brilliant at yet.
And even though Jerry Reed is not Burt Reynolds, you can tell Jerry Reed is really trying in every shot and is having a lot of fun with the part.
And here's another thing that's in a lot of modern road movies, the tough ass biker bar.
Well, now there's like the tough ass biker series with, Sons of Anarchy on FX, which I've heard is good. I've never seen it, but.
Gator Kings.
There's a sign outside that says, if you ain't redneck, you ain't shit. So.
I think that sign's misspelled.
It is. Shit is spelled S-H-E-E-E-I-T.
It's good ink on that guy.
As I recall, this scene is a highlight in the film. You kind of get a standard of, these kind of road movies where there's a bar fight.
Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure why he feels a need to talk to everyone in the parking lot.
A big thing about the bandit is that he's charismatic, and Snowman's trying to play that off. Whoa, it's a bit of a western there. It's a bit of a gangly fall. But I imagine, don't you think when this movie came out, there must have been people buying tickets for it, thinking it starred Burt Reynolds, because it's called Smokey and the Bandit Part 3?
I'm sure there are plenty of people who didn't do their homework and thought it was Burt Reynolds, but, I mean, if you go to a film and don't bother to learn anything about it, and then it doesn't have, and then it doesn't have what you expect in it, I don't think that's the movie's fault, necessarily. Unless it's one of those movies that's just been horribly marketed.
I like how it's not called Smokey and the Bandit 3, it's called Smokey and the Bandit Part 3. You know, kind of like it's like Godfather Part 2.
No, apparently Snowman's been hiding super strength and martial arts this whole time.
This seems a cute scene. I mean, I don't think it's funny, but at least it's kind of crazy. I know, I kind of enjoy it. Again, these are like the lamest throws out the wall.
Now, why did they go here? Do they need gas or fuel?
No, they needed food. He wanted a rare cheeseburgers. And I'm not sure why you'd get the food faster if you start tossing people out the window.
I don't know. Oh, they're nice to him now because he beat up the people of the place that they are at.
And now the bakers,
I don't understand this.
Yeah, and the bikers are going to play tag team, so to speak, with the
because like I've been to places. Here's the deal. Growing up in Virginia, as I did, I have had a lot of exposure to the good old boy South, and I've gone on hunting trips, and I've been to plenty of places like that. And in none of those places would people applaud you and be nice to you for beating the shit out of the regular customers.
Right, I do want to point out, even though it's a bar, considering that it's at a gas station, it's really more proper to call that a truck stop, even though it just was a bunch of bikers there, I don't think.
It's a gas and gulp, but I wouldn't call it a truck stop.
Mm.
Truck stops are the fortresses of the road.
Industrial and square.
I like that they were stacking empty boxes.
Now, why doesn't the bandit just, like, strap a bomb to the shark and blow it up? And that would cut things off.
That'd be intact, to be fair.
Oh, I guess he's still... Maybe he gets a chance at the money, too, if he beats him out there.
Well, yeah, they're going to pay him. I'm sure there's a bonus. Like any good Shadowrun, there's always a bonus.
I have to say, doing a sequel cast commentary is pretty fun. It's a lot... What was that?
I said we are going to have to do more of these.
I think so.
Now, will we always do it on the last movie in a franchise? Should that be our theme?
Well, it depends how easy it is to find the movie. That's the problem. Oh, but if it's on Netflix streaming, it increases our chances.
See, I don't like that. Like, that's a cool, like, crashing to the eggs. But at the same time, that's a lot of wasted food.
Eggs, I mean, milk, and ice.
Omelets and bread that I could have made with those eggs. Hey, there's another Betsy Billy sign there.
Ugh.
Like the crash is in slow motion, but the lady talking isn't.
If she was speaking in slow motion, that wouldn't make sense. My flowers. What about my flowers?
This scene is really messing up with my sense of space. I have no idea where any of these vehicles are in relation to each other, except that their paths keep crossing.
Oh, they're blocked by a truck. I wonder if it's a setup. Probably is. Don't.
Boing. Here, we should also put in more sound effects. Like the little duck sound effect when he wobbles over.
Oh, he's gay. He's backing up through a tight alley. The jokes are quite subtle in this film. Very, very subtle. So even though they didn't have GPSs, you think they'd be very familiar with roadmaps and things. Couldn't he back out of the alleyway and drive around the block? I mean...
You mean the trucker? Or Buford?
No, Buford.
Well, I think it's his pride. You know, he's like a Zax. You know, he can't deter from his course no matter what's in his way, he has to get the obstruction to move. You know, it's this kind of don't raise the bridge, lower the river attitude that a lot of sort of pompous, self-righteous people have. But the other thing you have to realize is that a lot of comedy comes from rigidity. I mean, that's why, you know, you always make the authority figure the bumbling fool, because when you give them, when you see that rigidity, when that rigidity comes up against logic, that's when you have comedy. Or when it's expanded to the national stage, that's when you get tragedy. But now, I just noticed Buford's son's name tag says Junior. So is his name Junior? He was actually christened Junior?
I think Junior might be his last name, because look, Buford says Justice on there.
Oh, that's true. So he won't let his son carry the family name.
I think it's like the Mario Brothers movie where his name is Junior Junior.
Mario, Luigi, Mario, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe, who knows.
Now, of course, there was a Junior Samples, and he could have had a son that could be Junior Samples Junior.
And a Moon Unit Zappa.
Oh, the Zappas all have great names.
Yeah.
Now, there's Buford forgetting how the brakes work.
You think he could, like, hijack, because, you know, being a member of the police, he could just hijack a police car or do a friendly favor thing?
Well, you like, say hijack, but you'd want to requisition.
Yes. Man, those
and
are the days,
they are
huh?
Trying to murder an old
Back
lady.
When a two-egg breakfast cost $1.10. Now a two-egg breakfast at a restaurant will cost you at least $6. Well, it depends on where you go, I guess.
I'll make my own two-egg breakfasts. I'd love to craft a good breakfast.
Fresh from the hysterectomy.
Ooh. I don't know if I like that.
Deal with a lot of medical terms at my job, so I have these images stuck in my head. I can't. Not that we see images, but we read about some pretty horrific things.
You know, I actually feel bad for all the other police officers and law enforcement personnel that are having to clean up the mess that Buford is causing.
But don't you figure there's people that wanted to join the police force because of Smokey and the Bandit?
I'm sure that there probably are some people that might have been set on that path, but I don't know.
Now, if you like Southern Cops, might I recommend a TV show? I believe it's on A&E, and it's Steven Seagal, Lawman. Where the actor Steven Seagal apparently has been like an honorary sheriff of a city in Louisiana, of a certain parish or something. So he's an out-of-shape modern-day Steven Seagal is in this reality show with cops trying to take down drug dealers and stuff. But they don't let him do anything too dangerous because he's Steven Seagal. So it's a pretty bizarre... Have you seen that, Thrasher?
I haven't seen it, but that's because I don't have cable.
It's on Netflix. Watch instantly.
Yeah, I don't want to watch it.
Oh, but Steven Seagal is a cop. Come on.
I've come to learn that I just don't have time for ironic television viewing.
Mm. So this is before NASCAR, isn't it? But it's sort of a...
No, NASCAR did exist, but it wasn't nearly as big a thing as it is today. I love that apparently they've been chasing each other with about 7 feet of distance between the two cars. So it's really, who wins this chase all comes down to who needs to stop and get gas first.
It's really about the thrill of the chase, I think. You know, the Bandit likes fucking with Smokey, with Buford T. Justice. That was a fine joke, I think. By this movie standards. Daddy, I'm scared. I know I can smell it.
It's a good little moment there. And it's a really rapid-fire exchange. It's in and it's out.
And, you know, the joke really lends an air of mystery because you don't know if it's a number one or a number two because smell could have to do with
or
that.
Three.
Or a three.
Yeah.
Because if you're a bird, that's number three.
There's a ramp.
Is someone going to jump it?
That is my life.
What? Everyone thinks you do everything
on purpose? Everyone thinks I did that on purpose and they love me. Oh, I'm a clown who cries. And there we have kind, well, okay, we didn't quite get a jump, but we did get some neat car acrobatics.
Now, was Smokey and the Bandit, was that before Live and Let Die? Because you kind of get that humorous Southern Sheriff character in Live and Let Die and Man with the Golden Gun.
I freely admit, I don't recall.
Oh, okay. But it's a similar caricature as Buford T. Justice, anyway. Where he says, like, damn, I swear I saw a Guna bird. What you doing, James Bond? It's really bizarre.
And there he goes. I imagine all the spinal injuries they must be getting for all the things they're doing with that car.
What, isn't the trick behind that is you have a specially weighted car that can do that?
I think so, but you'd have to have the right kind of center of mass. But at the same time, it's also, there's a lot of math, you have to get it up in the air just right. Unfortunately, I was never a physics major, so I can't really explain the mathematics of it. Now I'm just talking about jumping things. Let's call for another sip of whiskey and soda.
What kind of whiskey? Kentucky?
It's a Jameson, I think.
Ah.
Probably it was a birthday present. I believe I'm using it in the spirit in which it was intended.
I'd like to wish you a belated...
Good old-fashioned bribery.
Oh, lots of bribery. Come on in. Ugh. Where they have ferns in the bedroom. That's sexy.
Remember, this place is clearly inspired by the Madonna Inn, which is the place that has all the themed rooms, like the caveman room and the pharaoh room. It's a place with a really fascinating history. But the references to it have shown up in lots of movies.
But it's like a brothel?
No, it's not a brothel. It's,
no? Oh.
It is just a hotel with these themed rooms, but it's become a very big honeymoon and anniversary destination because of the themed rooms, because it can really add an air of fantasy. So that makes it attractive to couples.
Right.
And the thing is that it was never the plan for the Madonna Inn. It was owned and operated by a husband and wife, and the husband had to remodel one of the rooms and just on a whim remodeled it with a lot of stone, and it became the caveman room. And customers liked it so much that he kind of went room year after year, room to room, creating all these other settings. And it became a big thing. It became part of the place's identity. And Men in Drag.
I think it's a joke that works. They just look so ridiculous.
Well, it's a joke that works, but the initial humor you get by having an unconvincing man in drag, that's humor that comes and goes real quick. So you have, like, that's why it works so well in Monty Python, because the moment, even before the moment where you've stopped laughing at the pythons in drag, they've got some brilliant comedy routine going. You cannot rely on that, on a man in a dress to carry the scene. Now, how much money do you think Pepsi paid them to put a Coke vending machine in this movie?
How much did Pepsi pay them to have a Coke vending machine?
Yeah.
Why Pepsi? Because it's a Coke machine in a strip club?
They want to make their competitor look bad. So they the producers of a schlocky movie to put the other brand.
Yeah, because jokes are funny when you explain them.
I just vivisected that bit of comedy.
So those hammocks he's on, I used to have hammocks like that growing up, and I can attest they're extremely comfortable.
Oh, they're great. We used to have one, too, back in my family's old place. Just a great place to spend a summer afternoon.
Yeah, I live in Portland, Oregon right now, and you can't really have hammocks because it rains all the fucking time.
No, it occurs to me.
Yeah.
Is there any particular reason why the shark has to be in a hammock?
Oh, jeez. Land shark.
Yeah. Candygram.
Yeah, they had to do this joke in this with the Jaws.
Yeah, movie, inevitably right? They would have to do that.
And this is a Universal movie, as was Jaws. So.
Now, why she's putting it out in the hall and not just propping it up in the corner of a room?
She just wants to tease him. Okay, so this is, you're trying to do like orgy scenes in a PG movie.
And you saw, this is old school PG, not new school PG.
Right. But you saw tits there briefly.
Although, what kind of fetish involves full scuba gear and chains?
I mean, these cuts are so minute. I wonder if this got an R rating originally and they had to cut it down.
Well, clearly there's more going on than we were probably supposed to see. But again, it's very like there's like the briefest glimmer of an orgy, full-on orgy right there. Again, my life. And there you go, some fellas.
Oh boy.
Who are really into unconvincing transsexuals.
Takes all kind, and this was before the internet.
No, I like that Big Enos is unwilling to break character as he's being pulled into the room. No, of course, this is something I remember. Whenever you're engaged in any kind of fetish activity, no matter what it is, you want to keep it safe, sane, and consensual. You don't just want to grab somebody in a hallway and pull them into your dungeon room. That is not consensual. That is a very bad thing. And see, the freaks locking the freak scene.
You can see nipples through that top. I like that.
I know. Coke.
The nipple counter is 5. The red license plate counter is 63. So they got the shark. I think that was a Three Stooges bit, wasn't it? They were just going, near, near, near.
Well, it's a comedy. It's a comedy snarl. You know,
did he do that on the Honeymooners too?
Yeah, he would always like do a quick turnaround, wave his arms, and go Norton. Now I know you and Jason had commented: is that character supposed to be a man? Do you still ask that question?
No, looking at it now, I don't. But just, it has a very man-like face, like the jaw, the nose, the eyebrows. I mean, what do you think? Do you think I was mistaken in thinking that?
I will freely admit I don't know, because like the scarf around the neck makes me suspicious that it might be there to conceal an Adam's apple.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, I frankly don't know. Just with everything else that they've had, crazy sex thing they've had in this scene. A more convincing man dressed as a woman I could totally think would be there, although you still would not wear those pants. As somebody who's done lots of Rocky Horror, if you're a man dressed as a woman, you do not wear those kind of pants.
I still think that might be a man. I'm going back and forth. I'm not sure. So this bit of physical comedy is fine. This is...
Now, why is he gyrating like that?
He's trying to get out of the window, and it looks like they're having sex. Oh, it's hilarious. But it's okay. I mean, at least he's doing some physical comedy here. It's very crude.
He couldn't do this on the Honeymooners.
Nope. Yeah, the whole window's fucking open. Why wouldn't it be? I guess he wouldn't want to step on him. He can't even climb out of a window.
Now, once again, shouldn't they, like, which one of them do you think has a broken wrist from doing that tumble with the handcuffs on? they've escaped from a Tom of Finland portrait.
That was one of the only other good lines in the movie back there.
Which ones?
He said, Big Enos said, seems, to Little Enos, seems like this didn't go as expected.
Is that a couple fucking in that station wagon?
Yeah.
Or is he strangler? Is that an old man?
The line was, it seems like things didn't go as expected, and you got the big guy.
Oh, yeah.
As if them going into the male orgy room wasn't... I guess that could have been intentional.
Hey,
yeah, no, there's a couple fucking in the back seat.
Their car license plate.
Because, you know, it's so comfortable in the backseat of the car. Is it more the illicit thing of, ooh, we're going to get caught? Ooh, this is sort of in public.
Why does no one put that in the back seat?
Get that fish out of my mouth.
It's...
Stop it.
It fits. It'll fit. If it fits in the front, it'll fit in the back, ladies. So why did they put a shark in the back seat?
You know, I had an experience kind of like this where... I made a deal getting my father-in-law's big screen TV and trying to fit this like 52-inch plasma in the back of a tiny car. It took 3 or 4 different attempts, but we finally did it. We had to fold down the back seats and kind of shove it in at an angle and then protect the screen. Oh, he looks like a leprechaun because he's little and he's in a green suit.
It just looks like two Riddlers.
And he's still alive. I think they should cast him in a live-action Lucky Charms movie.
Wait a minute. Are those explosive-tipped poison darts?
I think he got those from Rambo, I think. Done like a true pygmy.
they could have thrown down some caltrops, but no. But I like that he has that skill. I like that he can hit a fast-moving target like that.
I think the way you would have done this sequel, if you couldn't have done it with Burt Reynolds and made it better, is they should have made this just about big-iness, little-iness in the car, and the bandits chasing them.
Well, that is kind of right? The sad thing, is of all the characters, big-iness and little-iness have the most chemistry together, so they probably should be getting more screen time.
Yeah, but if they were the lead, instead of having like an ersatz bandit... with
You know how you do it.
Yeah.
They have to go on the run from the law to clear their name. They got caught up in some business deal that went south, but they're actually innocent. So they got to outrun the cops long enough to get the evidence that'll exonerate them. And so you can still have Gleason.
You know, recently I was watching the Ghost Rider films around the time for my birthday, and I was thinking if they ever do a Ghost Rider 3, which I think they might, this sequel is low budget enough and it's doing okay overseas, is they should just make it like Smokey and the Bandit with a Ghost Rider. Because some of the old comics are like that, where the cops are just trying to chase the Ghost Rider. Oh, you see that man, his head's on fire.
Black license plate.
Thank you.
Again, I got to point them out.
So do you like that 80s things, the 80s thing they did with the cars, or I guess the 70s thing too, where it's the stripes over the lights?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a very good question. They're so adamant about holding onto the fish. Why didn't Justice and Junior take it with them? Why didn't Gleason force Junior to lug it? And why do they only just now notice it was missing?
Shouldn't there be a scene where Junior's strapped to the top of the car holding onto the shark?
You know, that would be some good physical comedy.
Yeah.
I'd buy that.
And he has to hold it as they try to take it out from him? I mean, that's something. I mean, that's a bit of a stunt. And speaking of stunts, there hasn't been stunts in a while, right? They're in the brothel. Or it's not a brothel, I guess it's just a hotel room. That's
the come on in.
The come on
it's
in.
It's a hotel with some special clientele.
Yes.
So now we have a tender kind of scene where we get to see the vulnerable, wistful side of Buford C. Justice.
He really shows his acting chops there. He just wants to go back to his rocking chair. But I don't think that's the case, because he agrees to this adventure. And yet, you know, they're just across the street from each other. I mean, this is just so lame, so much filler, like the rest of this film.
No, the Trans Am parked behind the cop car just off the road. How they can't, like, see or hear what's going on by the Trans Am, I have no idea. Also, how long, like, was Snowman waiting there? Because, like, they went all the way up the road and all the way back. And the bandit, it's like the bandit could have had that shark strapped down and he could have been on the road. Oh, hey! Special guest.
Yep.
Who apparently they had been waiting for them to come back. Or was maybe drugged and unconscious while the bandit was taking the shark.
I didn't realize the phrase, boo... Ours. As a sign of affection was around in the 70s, 80s.
A lot of slang is a lot older than you'd think.
Mm. Like the term sequel cast was invented in the 1950s.
I believe it by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yep. He was working on a script for a movie. He says, I got to get this sequel cast. Wait a minute. I like the sound of that.
And thankfully, he did not copyright it, which is how we were able to use it.
Yep. So this is some okay stunts with them on top of the car.
Is she trying to make out with him through that window?
I can't tell if that's a man or a woman still. I guess I'm bad at that. You know, there is someone that we knew in college, Thrasher, who he claims he dated someone and didn't realize whether they were a woman or a man.
But he decided to go for it anyway?
Yeah, but then it turns out it was a man who dressed like a woman. And he was very disappointed and upset and felt betrayed.
Did it never occur to him that he should, check first if that was going to be a problem?
I can say his first name. That's not going to get us in trouble, is it?
Well, we might know who it is. I can't imagine our listeners are going to. Hey, maybe they're having sex with cows. This is the laziest disguise, bright green with stuffed cow heads.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only fun sequences in this are the Big and Little Enos, and they're not even in it that much. But they're in this movie more than in 1 and 2.
Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I think that they really should have been the focus of the movie, or at least they should be with the bandit. And now they're going to ruin summer vacation.
And you could have called it Smokey and the Enos. Which is a funny title. And you spell the E in Enos with a 3. I'm a genius. Smokey and the 3.
Smokey Big and this little adventure.
Smokey and the Threeness.
Hey, that's the Trans Am of boats.
I hope it's going to go in the water. No, 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 no. I guess
it comes to a reasonable stop. He rendered that man powerless.
He did. Pushed an old man in the water.
Now, see, if this were a real active comedy, the moment he said, follow that sumbitch, the boat would have just pulled out, leaving him behind.
Right. But you gotta have him doing the splits.
And it took a long career, but Gleason finally said groin.
Yep. Whoa. It's nice to see them in different vehicles. I would have liked to see them do it more in the series. I mean, I know the big idea is the car chase, and that's the core of the series, but...
It just occurred, like, oh, God, I'm glad she wasn't holding onto that rope, because if she was, like, they crossed so close, I was worried she was going to get chopped up in the propeller.
These stunts are okay. I'll give him credit for that.
And even in a boat, they jump things.
Yep. Can't be a Smokey and the Bandit thing without a lot of jumping.
A little bit of boat safety. Normally, it's a no-wake zone under a bridge. So you wouldn't normally go through a bridge that fast. Could Junior be finding love?
I don't know. There's only 15 minutes left in the film.
Swinger.
All right, it's like a nudist colony or something, right?
No, clearly not, because I'm seeing a lot of clothes. Except for her. Although I do have to say, one of the sexiest, and I'm not joking, one of the sexiest things in the world is coming into a kitchen and there's somebody in there just wearing an apron. I don't care whether it's a man or a woman, there's just something primal and sexual about somebody naked except for an apron in the kitchen.
I don't think I've ever seen that in real life. I've seen pictures of that, but I have to keep that in mind.
What does that say? Mastercraft? I'm trying to read what's on the boat.
It's going too fast for me. But, you think they could have taken the shark with them in the water? That could have been some jokes, where they think it's a real shark.
This whole boat thing, when it comes down to it, is a completely unnecessary detour.
Absolutely.
They will chase the bandit before they'll get their damn fish.
Smokey and the Bandit 3 is an unnecessary detour.
And comedy fall.
I told you, there's the nudist people.
Well, they're not that hardcore. A lot of them are wearing pants. Although I do kind of like this, the sexual freewheeling out of control 70s, like being confronted by this like 1950s old Southern sheriff. Hey, he has a wife who he apparently abandoned the moment he retired.
I think that they should have had a scene with the wife being played by Jackie Gleason in drag.
He's pretty cut. He works out.
Surprisingly, yeah, that's a...
But you know what? That would have been really hilarious to have Jackie Gleason playing Justice's wife.
I think so. Okay, so now
are
you
they
get...
just trying to disguise a cherry picker as a damn tree?
Well, they got the camouflage, and now they set off explosives for no reason, much like the ending of one of the Caddyshack films, the first one.
Yeah.
And they even use the same music, I think.
Now, do you think that's like the kid or the grandson of one of the producers?
I'm sure.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to look that up.
Bet that's right. Sadly, yeah. the DVD of Smokey and the Bandit 3 does not have any special features. So they're trying to kill him, too. Timing the explosives not to kill the bandit.
So how did they know that they were going to drive down precisely this road?
They must have a. They must go in the walkie-talkie and talk to Big Enos and Little Enos, the bandit. So isn't this the same music at the end of Caddyshack? I think it is. I mean, it's a very famous piece of music besides that, but...
Although one thing I like about those explosions, they're nice and big and dusty. They're not big. They're not giant fireballs. They're more realistic for being big and dusty like that.
Yeah. Whoop! Oh, the car got blown up.
That's. I do like that you can sort of tell where you are in the movie by how much damage has been done to Justice's car.
That's a running gag in the series. It's kind of a nice touch.
Yeah.
But again, you still wish there would have been, instead of explosives, you wish it would have been like a race or some more of a showdown. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very anticlimactic.
Hey, they still have their floozies who are not in camo. That's a missed opportunity to have them in like camo bikinis or like, you know, shortcut military garb.
Painted on camo bikinis.
No, I also like that the Enos brothers aren't afraid to do lots of costume changes. I like that they have this massive wardrobe for literally any occasion.
And they aren't afraid to try and murder police officers they've made a bet with.
Yeah, you think like
setting off the explosives.
If anyone had died, what would their defense be?
He was Buford T. Justice, Your Honor. Oh.
Mars. Okay, I have not seen Funny Hijink 1 from Junior in this movie.
Well, he's the straight man, you know, the...
I guess so.
Jackie Gleason has all the jokes.
Which is a shame, because really Gleason should be the straight man in this relationship. No, I do like this. I do like, you know, the idea of sort of preserving the chase and stringing them on.
Yeah, can you have a bandit if you ain't got a Smokey? I mean, that's real core. That's a nice note to end the film on, I think.
No, it is good. It is a good line. I mean, hey, red license plate.
Yep.
A Georgia license plate, even though they're in Florida.
Although in Georgia, and my dad did this, you have a lot of people that drive down to Florida to buy cars because Florida has no sales tax.
Oh, yeah.
Is that still the case?
You know, actually, I don't know.
Oregon is no sales tax, and in Oregon, it's illegal to pump your own gas.
Oh, that's... pretty nice. Because I had the full service gas treatment in Jersey. It was fantastic.
I think in Jersey you're not allowed to pump your own gas either.
Yeah, it's classified as like a hazardous chemical. So it's all you know, they come out, they pump it for you. It really is like old timey, but I really appreciate it. I think it's really awesome. And it's a vestige of civilization.
And the finish line is this an Enos Fish and Chips restaurant?
It's pretty damn big. It's got to be the Enos Estate.
Looks like a country club.
Yeah, it's staffed entirely by floozies. And old porn stars.
So we're going to have to do the commentary all the way through the end credits, because that's what good commentaries do.
It is traditional, and we'll still have stuff to talk about. That canteen is right there.
Yep, around his belly.
Wait, so how did Justice win? Because he does have the fish. That's right.
The bandit let him win.
Oh, yeah.
Out of sportsmanship.
Now, of course, he's giving him money. He knows something's going to happen to it.
Yep.
Do you think that's a real grenade that little Enos has?
Maybe.
Oh, we're about to have some magic.
Thus, you get the Burt Reynolds cameo. Looks like they filmed him like on the front yard of his house or something. But, I mean, this isn't Burt Reynolds yet, but you'll see what we're talking about soon.
Don't give it away. He really hates his son. Yeah. I think that's what I like the least about his character. He really despises his own flesh and blood.
He's not meant to be a likable character.
Well, yeah, but it should be because he's an authority figure, not because he's abusing his only child. And possibly his wife. If some of the lines from the earlier films are going to go by. It's really sort of an unnecessary level of nastiness. Just prancing up with a damn gun.
So in his mind, he imagines him as a Burt Reynolds.
He's going senile. Burt Reynolds is blowing me away. It's why I can't speak to this scene.
Right. I mean, it just makes you wish, well, couldn't they have ponied up the budget and got him to do it again?
Oh, well, you know what? When I first saw this movie, I had not seen the first two Smoking the Bandit films. So this part really mystified me.
Why
Snowman turned into Burt Reynolds. So do you think Snowman's saying all these lines, or is Justice hallucinating this entire conversation?
I'm just mystified by Burt Reynolds' eyes and his magnificent stash.
You know, I do believe that stash on Gleason might be an application. Seeing it real close up now, that might be a stage makeup.
Stock footage.
When a movie, as MST3K pointed out, you know you're in trouble when a movie starts showing you clips of itself.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We used to have some neighbors, the Lipskises, and they had a little pier, and you could fish off that pier. Now, you'd never catch anything. The best you could really get is a minnow. But I'm out there with Joey, who was depending on whether the year ended in an even or an odd number, my best friend or my worst enemy, and we're out there swimming, and he is about to cast the line. And he gets the hook caught in my neck. Oh. And I'm like, no, don't cast. Because he would have ripped the hook and part of my neck clean off. Oh, man. So it's funny enough, it's not as painful. Like, getting the hook in you is not as painful as you think. It's getting it out that hurts.
Yeah, I had something happen with a fish hook. A few weeks ago, I was in a lake. And I was walking around in there. A lake where people could swim in, you know. And I had stepped, in the sand, and my foot got caught on a three-pronged hook.
Oh.
And luckily, I was able to pull it out very slowly, and there was no bleeding, and I had just gotten a tetanus shot at a physical a week before. So, it was fine.
Yeah, you want to pick that stuff up. You don't want to leave that or glass or anything like that on the beach. That's why I always pick up litter when I go to the beach. I just... Yeah. I can't.
Well, people would fish at the beach, too, right next to where these people were swimming was a thing, so...
So he's decided he prefers this stranger to his own son.
As bad as this movie is, this ending at least has that nice speech between Smokey and the Bandit.
It is nice, but...
And that they
I think he lost all the money?
Yeah. I think Junior probably gambled it. What's with this music? It sounds like...
No, it's real 80s.
Yeah.
And again, the movie is continuing to show us clips of itself. No bloopers, though. Like, it really should be bloopers.
Yeah. And they're just really brief clips, too. It's like, oh, there is a close-up. Wasn't it funny when... But it's not even the whole scene, so you don't get a sense of it.
Look, I really feel like when it shows these little scenes, it should have underneath, you know, so-and-so as this character.
Yeah.
Jackie Gleason's makeup, yeah.
Of course, ending with the Patton image. Yeah, synthesized country music. I don't know what to think about that.
Yeah, it came and went pretty fast. Ritz Catering.
Smokey and the Bandit. That's and the Bandit 3.
A surprising number of sound effects guys on here. But not too many Foley artists, just two guys.
Yeah. Good old Stanley Polinski. Best Foley artist in the biz. Yeah, you know, Smokey and the Bandit 3 was not directed by the director of the first two. So, although it keeps the look of the other films, it's just the budget is so low, they can't do that many stunts.
Shirley Bird, that's an adorable name. Like this, that's a kick-ass cartoon character name. I would expect to see a Shirley Bird on Living Island with H.R. Puff and stuff.
I like how they credit Burt Reynolds as the real bandit.
That's got to be a real fuck you to the guy who played Snowman.
Well, but it's not incorrect.
Yeah, but again, it's your movie. It's Black Man Number One. That's the credit that Jackie Davis gets.
You think that's a real name? One of the actresses' name was D.D. Deering.
I mean, it could be. And Black Man Number Two, who gets a billing several paces after Black Man Number One. And apparently there was a baby Enos. I have no idea who that was.
You know, sometimes they credit stuff that was in deleted scenes in the end credits of a film.
I suppose so.
So. That could be the
case. I like to pretend that Christopher D. Lee was Christopher Lee.
Man.
I was in the
So we're looking here in the credits. Let's see if there is a song by Jerry Reed on there, who plays, you know, Snowman and did the hit song Eastbound and Down from the first film. And he's not looking like it. Now, why wouldn't they get him to do a song for this? Is he just like, oh, I'm sick of doing Smokey and the Bandit?
I think they didn't ask him, or they didn't think they could pay for it, or they couldn't pay for it. I mean, again, diminishing returns often leads to diminishing investment in the sequels. All right. Well,
that's the end of our very first sequel cast commentary, which you very kindly had purchased from sequelcast.bandcamp.com.
I hope everyone listening got as drunk listening to it as we did recording it.
Boy, howdy. You know, if you like this and stuff, send me an email at sequelcast@gmail.com. Be sure to check out our website at sequelcast.com, where we do such fantastic things as review movies in a franchise one film at a time. We have almost 100 episodes collectively all together.
I cannot wait for that 100th episode.
Dear God.
Special episode I'm sure we're going to do.
Yes, there has to be a special one for number 100. Yeah, I don't know what sequel that one's going to be. It's because the ones with the sequel, the movies and sequels are numbered, but the specials are numbered separately. So it's kind of confusing. And check out our Facebook page, facebook.com, and look up SequelCast on there. And we got a blog, sequelcast.blogspot.com. So, yeah, anything you want to close out the Smokey and the Bandit 3 commentary with, Thrasher?
I was happy that, you know, this movie's been my guilty pleasure since I was like 8. I am happy to have shared it with the world in this weird and wonderful way. I'm glad you suggested doing this, Matt.
Right, no, doing a commentary is pretty fun. I thought it would be more difficult, but it's actually easier when you're watching the movie as it goes along, instead of trying to remember, like we do in the sequel cast, wasn't there a scene where the guy said he's too old for this stuff? Oh, wait, shit.
That's why I always take extensive notes.
I did at one point, and then I stopped, because I wasn't watching the film. I just was taking notes. Okay, I'll see you... Yeah, so thanks again for purchasing this and help support the sequel cast.
Yeah, no, and we look forward to filming and recording another commentary for you.
Yeah, that'd be boring, filming the video feed from Skype. Two talking heads talking about a movie while the movie's not even going on. Jeez.
We'd have to introduce some puppetry.
And that's another thing. If you go to YouTube, look up sequel cast, we're on there as well. And I've been doing a lot of video reviews of video games based on movies. Retro video games, specifically. So it's pretty Nintendo, Game Boy, that sort of stuff.
The movie's been over for quite a while. We probably ought to wrap
it up. We should wrap it up. Okay. Good night and good luck.
That's about it. And keep chasing that bandit.
Eastbound down, road open, trucker. And we're gonna do what they say can't be done. Okay, that's it. Bye.
Bye.
That was fun. Bye.